Our correspondent in the US today is Danielle Kurtzleben, who is with NPR, where she's on its Washington desk. Danielle, welcome. The former president's trials continue. Which one are we focusing on this week?
Yes, it's confusing even for those of us who cover this. So we're going to focus on two of them, two of the four that are swirling around. The first one is his civil fraud trial. Now, earlier this year, Trump's bond was put at $454 million. That's huge, nearly $500 million. And a judge this week, today, actually said, okay, that bond is going to be lowered to $175 million. Trump's team had argued that he simply would not be able to come up with slash guarantee that amount of money for bond by the deadline. So the judge said, all right, fine, $175 million, and you get a few more days to do this. So that is what is happening. Now, to be clear, Trump, while I'm sure he is quite happy about this, also continues to rail against this, to say he's still going to appeal this. But if he loses his appeal, he will have to pay all $175 million of those dollars. And again, that is his civil fraud trial in which he and his sons and Trump Organization employees are accused of inflating the assets of Donald Trump and of his company in order to procure better loan deals, credit terms, that sort of thing. Now, one other thing that happened is that his hush money case regarding the adult film star Stormy Daniels, the date of that has been set for April 15th. Again, former President Trump is very not happy about this. This is related to the accusation that through his lawyer, Michael Cohen, Trump paid her $130,000 during the 2016 campaign to not talk about an affair that she said she had had with Donald Trump decades ago. Even listing this off to you, it sounds surreal that we are at this point. We are talking about adult film stars and business fraud, but this is where we are, and it's going to make for an unprecedented election year.
All right. I know you've been having a good look into the former president's rallies, and I guess how they are different from other candidates' rallies typically. What's the analysis you've been doing?
Yes, I've been going, I go to a lot of these things. I have been for the past 6 months, and it's his rallies both are very different from any other candidate, and also I would argue a bit different from how they used to be. And the big way to really think about it is the amount of embattlement that Trump feels and that his supporters feel. Now, of course, there's the anti-democratic rhetoric, anti-immigrant rhetoric, sometimes racist and misogynist rhetoric, and this is not to ignore any of that, but there is very much a feeling at a Trump rally of we have so many enemies. The former president has a lot of enemies, and therefore we, as his devoted followers, also have a lot of enemies, and that is part of our political identity, right? And so one way that I've been talking about this is the merch you can buy at a Trump rally. It is hard to describe how these things are like a rock concert or kind of like a mega church service. People line up, they wait for hours, maybe even overnight, and everybody comes decked out in their Trump merch, t-shirts, buttons, flags, etc. And so much of it is confrontational. It says things like, I'm a Trump supporter, and if you don't like that, I don't care, is sort of, to sort of paraphrase what a lot of the shirts say. And very much the message from these rallies is, if you support Trump, people are going to argue with you, and that's how you know you're doing things right. And it makes it very hard to convince his supporters of anything otherwise. It's really just a sign of what a strong bond there is between the two of them. And so really the point of this was to say, if you only hear the wild rhetoric out of his rallies, that's not everything. These things are an all-day event for his supporters, and then some.
The bond comment is an interesting one, and it speaks to, I guess, how tribal in some ways politics, not just in the United States, but in many places has become, but particularly for those who support the former president and indeed supported him when he became president for the first time. Now, another interesting character in the Republican Party is Marjorie Taylor Greene. She filed a motion to oust the GOP House Speaker. How did that go?
We're waiting on it. So, right, she filed a motion to oust House Speaker Mike Johnson, who you may recall was only elected speaker after a handful of other Republicans failed in their bids to be the House Speaker. Furthermore, two other House Republicans recently resigned or said they would soon resign. So Republicans' grip on the House is getting smaller. And so, long story short, it is very easy to oust a House Speaker right now because Republicans' majority in the House is so slim and getting slimmer. So it is very easy for someone like Marjorie Taylor Greene to come forward and say, hey, you are not sufficiently conservative. So I and two or three or four or five of my fellow far right friends, we are going to vote against you. And that can be a very credible threat to kick someone out. Now, the reason she's saying she wants to do this is because we were supposed to have, the U.S. government was supposed to have yet another shutdown this last weekend. Now, Mike Johnson ended up working out a way to keep the government funded. And Marjorie Taylor Greene said, no, 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 that is the leverage that we Republicans had. And you just lost it. You are not being essentially tough enough. And this is why Kevin McCarthy got ousted as well. It is a party that has the power in the House, but also is so much at war with itself that it finds it hard to really do anything with that power. It's fascinating. And also, I mean, it means that our legislature doesn't do a lot.
True. There's also that key group of whom Marjorie Taylor Greene was a member who proved so challenging to the former speaker. 13 rounds, I think, he went in order to be elected. What sort of how much do they still cooperate as a group, if you like, Danielle?
When it comes to legislation, when legislation comes forward, I mean, often, yes, House Republicans will vote together when it comes to legislation that is not about funding the government. That seems to be a key difference that House Republicans will have with each other, right? Because many in leadership do not want to be blamed for a government shutdown. American voters of any party generally do not like government shutdowns. But she's willing to risk that. But yes, I mean, in other words, when it comes to any sort of bill that pertains to especially conservative social issues, House Republicans will vote together. But this is definitely one area where she especially and the rest of people in her little wing of the party are willing to throw bombs.
Thank you, as always. Danielle Kurtzleben is with NPR. She is based in Washington, D.C.